Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder as I drop my kid off at swim practice and deliver an episode to you while I walk around. I'm Brendan Riley. Well, good morning, listeners. It is a lovely early July morning, July 2nd to be precise. The sun is shining, the birds are chirping, and the weather is surprisingly pleasant. I'm afraid I come to you a little unprepared for this day's episode, but this is the time I have to record it, and so I have an idea for what I want to talk about, but it's not very well fleshed out. So pardon me if it's a little less refined than some of my previous episodes. This weekend, I got to play two different heavily narrative-focused games. My family and I played the first chapter of Legacy of Dragonholt and the ninth chapter of Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective from the original game, which has now been republished as The Thames Murders and Other Cases. So if you're not familiar with these games, Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective is a mystery-solving game in which you play some of the Baker Street Irregulars, Wiggins and a couple other people, who have come under Holmes's tutelage to learn how to solve mysteries. So Holmes will have a mystery that he needs investigating. He'll invite you to compete with him, I guess, in trying to solve the mystery quickly. The way the game works, you get a case brief that gives you a short description of how the mystery came about, your basic starting information, and then you get a map of London and a newspaper from that day and a phone book. Let's see what else. And a list of people that you might want to go see regularly, like the coroner. And then you get in the case book, there are listings for all these different addresses. And if you want to know more about the crime scene, you would go to the crime scene. If you want to know more about the girlfriend of the person who was murdered, you go visit her and you look her up in the phone book and you go to her house, that sort of thing. So the way the game works is that you're uncovering the mystery as you go from place to place and learning things. And the game part of it, the pressure of it, is that you lose points for every extra place you go that Holmes didn't go. So at the end, Holmes will ask you a series of questions and you have to answer them. And the speed and quality of your answers, I guess not speed, the quality of your answers determines how many points you get. And then you lose points for your poor speed. Because inevitably you're going to visit, I mean, we generally visit between 15 and 20 locations. I think this most recent game I played, which was case number 9, we ended up going to 15 locations. And for the way the game scores is for every place you visit that Holmes didn't go, you lose 5 points. And you get points. Usually there's about 150 points to be earned by answering questions. And then a perfect score is 100. If you're able to answer all of the main case questions and visit the same number of locations Holmes did, then you'll score exactly 100 points. We've never gotten 100. Our best score has been 75. We got 60 yesterday, which is a really good score. We're very happy with that. Legacy of Dragonholt is another story-based game, but this one, it's more like a choose-your-own-adventure kind of. Each person has a character sheet, sort of like in a traditional Dungeons & Dragons campaign, but you have a few skills. And you have stamina, which represents your, health and stamina. But there's no armor class rating. There's no dice rolling. It's all decision making. So when you're in a tough spot or even any kind of spot, you have to decide what to do. And the decision applies to one member of the group. when one member of the group makes a decision, then they flip over this activation token that shows they've decided, and they don't get to do another decision until everyone has done something. Which can be really interesting because you don't know what skills are going to be necessary later. We had several times in this first edition where one person had made a decision, and then we had a series of choices come up where that person's skills would have been very helpful, but we couldn't get them because they'd already decided. So it became the main mechanism, actually, from a game perspective, is trying to decide when to have people make their decision. Because if they make their decision early, and then we need their skill, we don't have it. So that's Legacy of Dragonholt. The third game I'd put into this category is Mythos Tales. I talked about this quite a bit before. It operates on the same model as Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, but instead of investigating Victorian era murder mystery, they investigate 1920s H.P. Lovecraft style cosmic horror. All three of these games turn on this idea of a narrative in the game being driven by the player's interaction with it. All three are not replayable, at least by the same players, because narrative is the key component. When you replay, you've already encountered the narrative. Now, it's possible that Legacy of Dragonholt might be a bit more replayable because that you could take paths you hadn't tried before. Do you do this or do you do that? There would be some things. In this first episode, it felt pretty on the rails. Feels like there might have been a couple different ways we could go, but not significantly. I hope that later episodes have more divergent paths that would lead to different outcomes, such that on a second play you could go a different direction. But really, the game is not intended to be played more than once by the same group. The nice thing about all three of these is they're not exhaustible either. You don't do anything to the components when you're playing, so you can always play again. This makes them distinct from legacy games, where the choices you make are permanent because you alter the physical components of the game. But also it means that when you play a legacy game, your opponents can't, or you can't play it again. You can't give it to someone else to play again. Our copy of Pandemic Legacy, for instance, is trash. So as a game scholar, somebody who's studied video games, the question of, oh, there's a mailbox tipped over. That's disturbing. As a game scholar, I've mentioned in previous episodes, there's two sort of sliding scales in the history of video game scholarship. And that's the scale of gameplay versus the scale of narrative. Or in teacherly terms, narratology versus ludology. Games like Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective lean heavily on the narratology side of things, on the narrative side. There's hardly any game there at all. It does have a game mechanism, and the game mechanism is built around the idea that you have to do something in a particular time or a particular order. And if you fail to do that, you lose points in an interesting way. But generally, the thing you're doing is more of an activity. If you don't care about the scoring, you can spend as much time as you want. You can visit all the leads, you can exhaust them, and then when you feel sated, you can go. As opposed to feeling the pressure of time running out, or in Mythos Tales, where time actually does run out, and you are forced to take guesses. Now, we've had a couple mysteries in Sherlock Holmes where it turns out we were just completely going down the wrong path. That we get to the end and we have no idea what the answers to the main questions are. That's some of the games where we score, like, negative points. But there are other ones where we felt like we really got a solid idea of what was happening and we solve it. And those are super satisfying. But it does sort of beg the question for me of how do you make a more narrative game? Time stories might be one answer. Time stories is heavily narrative. When you're playing and you go from location to location, you are learning the secrets of that location and they're not something you can return to. And it uses a heavy puzzle component, like an escape room or something, that gives you more game kind of things to do. But ultimately, the narrative is still the primary thing. And I think if time stories were a little less gamey, it would be fine. In fact, the thing people complain about is, like, you could be doing well, you could have sort of solved the puzzle of how to do all this quickly, and then you have a couple bad die rolls and it eats up your time. And I agree, that part is pretty frustrating as a player. So it makes thinking about how to build narrative into a game really difficult. What I'm really interested in are games that work to build narrative in the context of more game stuff. Thinking here of things like Euphoria and Scythe, the Jamie Stigmeier games from Stonemaier Games. Those games are pretty interesting because generally the elements in the game are extremely thematic. And they are designed to help provoke narrative idea, even in a game where the narrative is almost absent. In Scythe, for instance, you have these, I don't know, event cards that you get when you go to a place with a particular symbol on it. And when you do that, then you get this card that gives you a choice. And that choice is tied to game mechanisms. So you have to decide, do you want to help out this old man and get some fame, or do you want to steal the old man's grain and get grain? But it's depicted in this context of this choice that you're making rather than in mechanical terms. So the second part of that is that the narrative doesn't really feel like narrative. I mean, it's there, but you still usually, I think, make the choice based on your needs as a player more than your needs as a whatever the narrative version of as a storyteller. And I think that's true. I think about Anachrony as well. Anachrony has a couple different elements that involve storytelling. For instance, one of the things you can do is use a leader to wake up all of your resting workers. And when you do that, it costs a certain amount of resources and your morale goes up. On the other hand, you can use a free action to wake everybody up without using the resources. And when you do that, morale goes down. Now, within the mechanism of the game, that's a pretty interesting narrative image. You can imagine this is a sort of doomsday society where everybody's living in their own dome and they're working hard to survive. And so if the leader is able to find breakfast for everybody or find meals for everybody this week and say, okay, we can all, you know, have full rest periods and you get full rations this week, that morale would go up. By contrast, if the leader tells everybody they have to go back to work on half rations and without enough sleep, then you can see why morale would go down. And if morale goes down too far, you have to start killing workers in order to keep waking them up without feeding them. Which again, narratively makes a lot of sense. But in my experience, people generally make that choice not about narrative, not do they want to be a leader who goes out of his way to get resources for people, or do you want to be a leader who people don't care, who doesn't care about what his people think and doesn't care about their happiness, just gonna use them as much as you can. Instead, it's just, if I can afford the resources to wake him up without hurting morale, I will. But desperate times call for desperate measures, and if I have to get stuff done, I'm not going to sacrifice parts of my turn in order to let them have sleep so they can be mad at me. And the morale doesn't feel very narrative. I mean, there's a little bit there. It's definitely more narrative than, I don't know, putting a road down in Catan. It doesn't feel like you're building a society. But again, it's subsumed by the mechanism. The third option, it seems like, to build this kind of narrative in is something like Dead of Winter. And Dead of Winter is interesting because it alternates back and forth and it's crossroads cards. If you haven't played Dead of Winter, I'll explain it for you. Mosquito. In Dead of Winter, you play colonists in a Arctic colony, like in Alaska, I think, during the zombie apocalypse. And so there's zombies lurching around town. and you're in the compound trying to survive with your fellow compound mates, and you're being menaced by zombies the whole time. The game comes with this thick deck of crossroads cards, which are narrative components that give you something to do or a choice to make when you are playing. And the way it works is when it's your turn, the person to your left has a crossroads card with a condition on it. It'll say, like, if the player travels from one location to another. And then if you do that, then the player with the crossroads cards interrupts you. They say, hold on, you're at a crossroads. And then they read the crossroads cards to you. In the original incarnation of the rules, the yield was made from narrative to gameplay, because the instructions told you when you read the card to read both the choice and the outcome. So as a player, you get to decide the effect of your choice based as much on how it'll affect the game than how it'll affect the story you're all telling through this really thematic and narrative game. Well, very quickly, some groups started just ignoring that rule. I know in my group, I generally encourage people, I thought we should read the card but not say what the results were of the choices and let the person decide, and then they find out. That seemed both more compelling and more interesting. You could still tell which option did what. Like, one of the famous ones, a woman with a suckling infant shows up, and then I think she probably dies, maybe, and you have the infant. I think that's how it goes. And so then you have the choice. It's a mother and an infant, and I think you have the choice. Do you say no, they can't come in, or yes, they can? And if they come in, then they become two, what they call helpless survivors, which are people who eat your food but don't help in any way. They just take up resources. On the other hand, if you reject them, then morale goes down because the whole colony feels bad that they kicked out a mother and her baby to probably be eaten by zombies. And those results are pretty obvious when you're reading the card, that those are the possibilities. But to not have the game tell you specifically what the result is, to me, feels much more compelling. So as somebody who's interested in making thematic games and encouraging theme in my game, I'm really keen to think about how I can build into a game release system, something like Dead of Winter, the choices or the elements that feel like you're playing a game without yielding so much that people start to, in their reviews, say, well, it's pretty fun, but it's more of an activity. That to me would be a failure of game design, to make a game that people would characterize that way and sometimes dismiss that way. So I'm curious, as game players, what are some elements of games that you've found particularly compelling from a narrative standpoint? What are game mechanisms, game techniques, just examples of games that you think tell a good story but also feel like you're playing a game and make the choices in both parts of that pretty compelling? Drop by our guild 3269 on BoardGameGeek to let me know. We have a link there from the show notes page, which you can find at rattleboxgames.com. If you're interested in commenting on the show, you can do that at the guild, or you can reach out to me directly, brendan@rattleboxgames.com. You can tweet at me @rattleboxgames. Well, that's it for me. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope that your next walk is as pleasant as mine was. Bye-bye.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.